Next up on Off Duty, cereal as creative canvas.
Helping you enjoy the finer points of food and drink. This is Off Duty from the Wall Street Journal.
Hello, and welcome to the Off Duty podcast, where we talk about food and drink and also what's for dessert. I'm Beth Cracklauer.
And I'm Kevin Sintemong.
And we're very excited about talking to today's guest, award-winning pastry chef, owner of the Milk Bar Bakeries in New York, Toronto, and D.C., cookbook author, judge on MasterChef and MasterChef Junior, and master of the crack pie. Welcome to the podcast, Christina Tozzi.
Hi, guys. How are you?
Great.
We're so glad you're here. Let's start backwards from how we would normally do this and begin by talking about the latest thing you've done, this project you've consulted on, opening Monday in Times Square, a cafe serving bowls of cereal, but not just any cereal. Tell us what's special about the cereal being served at Kellogg's NYC.
Of course, not just any cereal. I don't do anything ordinary. But what I do is try and sort of use my sort of creative and innovative powers to make things accessible and interesting. And that's what you're going to find at Kellogg's NYC. We open on Monday, as you guys mentioned, and you'll find a ton of different things at the cafe. But what you're going to find on my end, coming straight from me, are 10 different cereal combinations, different bowls of cereal. Each one of them sort of highlights a different cereal in my mind, and a different flavor combination. I took a while to sort of create and curate these different bowls of cereal with the real goal to be to remind people how fun and exciting cereal is, how fun and exciting it can be, and how much it can span sort of what we're finding today in the food industry, which is people that are really curious and interested about food, about eating it, tasting it, experiencing it, and creating it themselves in their own kitchens back at home.
Right. I like that kind of mix and match approach. I'm a fan of cereal to begin with, so this isn't a hard sell. We're off on Monday for the 4th, but when I go first thing Tuesday morning, I'm going to have my breakfast there. What should I order? What's one of your favorite bowls on the menu?
Ooh, okay. So when I put these bowls together, I wanted to make sure there was a range of different things for different people, because obviously people have different preferences in terms of flavor, what they like to eat for breakfast, mm-hmm. whether they skew more to the savory, whether they skew more to the mellow, whether they skew more to the sweet, the bright, the adventurous, and so on. One of my favorites, especially for breakfast, the cafe is open from 7 a.m. to 11 p.m., so you can literally get cereal any time of the day or night. Mm-hmm. You can get it with whole milk, skim milk, soy milk, yogurt, or soft serve ice cream. Cough,
wow.
Cough, the 11 p.m. cereal crawl uh-huh. will certainly be happening then. The pistachio lemon is one of my favorite cereal combinations for breakfast. It's a mixture of Frosted Flakes and Special K. There's toasted pistachios, some fresh zingy lime zest, and some thyme leaves. Sorry, lemon zest and some thyme leaves.
Wow.
It's bright. It's fresh. There's an unexpected nature to it, but it's a really lovely way to, like, gently wake your taste buds up in the morning and to sort of fuel yourself for the day ahead.
Pistachio lemon. That sounds delicious. Now, you and cereal go way back.
Yes.
Yeah, they're best buds. There's a famous cereal milk ice cream, which you serve at Milk Bar. And there's a fair amount of cornflakes and other cereals that show up in other Milk Bar desserts. What appeals to you about cereal as an ingredient?
You know, cereal, I go, like, all the way back to my childhood, as most people with cereal
sure.
relationships do. My relationship with cereal as a kid was one in the context of me being a super picky eater. My mom finally realized that if she let me pick out the cereal that I wanted to eat at the grocery store, we had an agreement that she could pour as much milk over it as she wanted as long as I drank the milk mm-hmm. at the end of my cereal bowl, hence me creating cereal milk 7-8 years ago.
Uh-huh.
when I think about cereal now, I really think about it in two ways. I think about it from being a curious home cook as a kid, and I think about it about finding a way to sort of translate that into being a professional chef now. My real food philosophy is that the things I create, I love to be a chef because I love to create, but I also love to be a chef because I love to feed and I love to connect with people through food. And I think one of the most successful ways of doing that is by using flavors and ingredients that people know because they already have a relationship with. They already have a food memory that's rooted in a flavor, an ingredient, an element of a dish. And I like to think about that when I'm reverse engineering a creation that I'm making at Milk Bar. I think those are some of the most successful dishes that we see on MasterChef, or even are the ones that tie into flavors and elements that that our taste buds already know and our memories know and our stomachs, you know, speak to our hearts and go, that's good. Let's talk about it. I'm obsessed. And so cereal for me is a really powerful vehicle because it certainly creates that nostalgic moment. And it creates, you know, I have that deep-rooted relationship with cereal. So for me, it's a vehicle for making that connection. And then what I choose to do with it is what allows me to be a great chef. So we have a cereal bowl called the Corny Blues at Kellogg's NYC, and it's corn pops and blueberry jam and lemon zest and a pinch of salt. And it's a celebration of corn and blueberries. My family's from the Midwest, so those are things that, like, I'm craving right now. It's summertime. Those things are in season. But it's relating back to this bowl of cereal that I also have these other food memories with. And so cereal for me is a great vehicle for flavor building, but also for, like, that nostalgia relationship memory tapping into device that I think is so powerful as a chef.
Well, I think another aspect of it that your mom clearly recognized way back when is that cereal's fun. And, you know, a lot of one of the major appeals of Milk Bar, I think, beyond the fact that it's just really good, is that it's fun and maybe even a little bit irreverent. You know, such obvious care goes into making the food, but it doesn't take itself too seriously.
Thank you. At that, for me, you hit the nail on the head. It is about that, the spirit of, listen, I know food well. I've worked in, you know, decades in professional, very fine dining restaurants. And I realized as I was working my way up and through the madness that my personality, my spirit is very much an accessible, don't take yourself too seriously personality. And I think it's important that that's reflected through food. That's what food brings to me. It brings me joy. It's never too fancy for me. It doesn't ever feel like it's speaking over to me. It's my sidekick in enjoying life. And a bowl of cereal embodies that 100%. It's a place where you can go for creativity and whimsy and adventure just as much as it is nurturing and nostalgic.
Well, I think, you know, Milk Bar and the kind of desserts that you made there came along at an interesting moment in our food culture. It opened in 2008, and, you know, we were thoroughly steeped in the gospel of local and seasonal, and that's a gospel I totally respect, but it's very earnest and very reverential, you know. And then in March's Milk Bar, with this unabashedly irreverent and fun line of baked goods that, you know, were incredibly thoughtfully prepared, so very much in line with everything we were supposed to love. But then, you know, some of them had rainbow sprinkles on them, and some of them had cereal and other really accessible ingredients that people would recognize from their own supermarket aisle.
Yeah,
so, you know, along with,
like,
the nostalgia appeal,
yeah, it was like,
you know,
permission to be okay with these things. The other thing you have to remember is that in 2008, food was this big focal point. Fine dining was at its peak. But the other thing that was happening is the economy was really crumbling. And so people went from enjoying the big, glitzy, glammy part of dining out to being incredibly stressed out and worried about how to enjoy life while worrying about the financial affairs of their world. And I think Milk Bar had this moment in time when we opened in 2008 as well, where not only were the the products were certainly an approach of like, it's accessible, it's not too fancy, it's for anyone and everyone. There's a spirit, there's a lightness to it, there's an indulgence to it, but also anyone and everyone can get to it. It's a $2 cookie. Mm-hmm. And I think that moment in 2008 was certainly about what we were doing in food, but I think one of the other reasons that it was so well received was we're obviously unapologetic in many ways, but we gave people permission to smile at life and have a lightness about their day through rainbow sprinkles and through cornflakes and through crack pie and through birthday truffles and so on. And that has certainly been like a lovely moment that happened at a time that was tricky for people, but I think that really helped us truly define who we are on a bunch of different levels, but we were under a magnifying glass because it was also what people really needed at that time.
Right, right. The whole comfort food thing. And
yes.
So in what ways do you think the conversation around dining and pastry has changed since then?
Man, it's changed dramatically. I think that back when I was getting started in my profession, being a pastry chef professionally meant that you were the pastry chef of a fine dining restaurant. Like if you were the world's mm-hmm. best pastry chef, that was the path you took. And I think through Milk Bar, I really helped redefine that path along with a few other great pastry chefs. Pastry chefs now get just as much attention and just as much spotlight as savory chefs, rightfully so. Everyone's talented in their own right. But you're also finding pastry chefs coming out with their own voice and their own vision and their own shop and their own concept. Mm-hmm. And I think that that's happening because people are enjoying the small indulgences in life throughout the day. I think it's because people are more and more curious about food and they spend just as much time with the curiosity of savory food as they do sweet food. And just food in general, food any time of the morning, noon, or night. I mean, you think about the same thing with like brewmasters or coffee roasters or jam makers or otherwise, the opportunity to separate out how we think about these instances in our day where we're enjoying food or drink on a bunch of different levels is becoming all the more sort of everyday and accessible. And I think it's great. It's giving craftsmen across the board in the food and beverage industry so much more of a platform to stand on, and you're getting a lot more innovation and creativity and originality out of it, which is just awesome to see being in the industry.
Do you think with Milk Bar and your emergence as a media personality and sort of the rise of the cult baked good from the crack pie to the cronut, do you think that the general public is more in tune to pastry as a creative art form?
I do. I think that, 10 years ago, 15 years ago, there wasn't a lot to find in between a chocolate chip cookie and a chocolate souffle or a baked Alaska or a molten chocolate cake that you would find either at your corner bakery or at like the end of a beautiful fine dining meal. Mm-hmm. And now that we're creating a really solid world of dessert and pastry in between, whether it's through amazing artisanal ice cream or cereal milk saucer at Milk Bar,
right,
or otherwise, we're really filling the gap in between. And I think it's forcing the world to really think about dessert and baked goods differently and with the innovative spirit that professionals like me are bringing to the space.
Well, I think we really need to emphasize again that, these desserts you're making, though they're fun, are, the result of years of training. Most everything except for the rainbow sprinkles is made from scratch. And, in a way, some of my favorite items at Milk Bar are the simplest ones. I think they kind of lay that bare and show you the real craft of what you do. For instance, my all-time favorite, the corn cookie. Why is that cookie so good?
I love it. I think you make a great point, right? I think the hardest part as a chef and probably why you didn't see it in the food industry sooner was chefs are more recently getting the limelight, where previously to show that you were a great chef, you had to show your finest, most out of reach technique and skill in action. And it's hard as a chef to know that you can make the most complicated dessert or dish with the most hard to find ingredients and serve it to people and blow their minds. But are you really going to make the connection with them? And is it really that accessible? How many people are you going to reach? And as a chef, I really had to think about it and go, you want to know what? I'm a chef for the people. I'm about creating food for the people. The more people I can reach, the more people I can access and inspire and feed, the happier I am. That's why I love to cook. I love to cook. I love to bake because I love to feed. And so you're finding chefs that are willing to curb the sort of showy nature of, like, I know how to do all of that stuff, but my spirit is in a corn cookie. And that's what I want to feed you, even though I can do much fancier stuff and I can do much more basic technique. I can do it all. But for me, a corn cookie is just as special as something fancy and fine dining that you would find on a dessert menu. The corn cookie for me is a sugar cookie. And we take some of the flour out of a sugar cookie, like a basic sugar cookie recipe that we've developed at Milk Bar. And in its place, we take freeze-dried corn that we grind down into a flour-like consistency. So we take it and we grind it in the food processor down until it's literally the same consistency as flour. And then we put it into the cookie dough. My family is from Ohio. That's where I was born. That's where I spent, you know, much of my sort of informative years as a teenager. Mm-hmm. And my family's homes are in between cornfields in Ohio. I love corn. I love sweet corn. I love salty corn. Corn, for me, is like the beautiful vehicle that spans both savory and sweet. And the corn cookie is a complete sleeper menu item at Milk Bar. The ones that know it and love it are my favorite people in the world, because it's not the one that everyone talks about, but for me, I think it's the one that has the most personality, because it's so bold and unapologetic in its flavor, but it's also seemingly so simple, though it's deep and complex as well.
It's completely addictive. And that, as I recall, is in the Milk Bar cookbook, right?
It the is. Recipe for it's that. In the first cookbook, that Momofuku Milk Bar, which is sort of all of the recipes from the bakery. And the cookbook itself is technical in its own right, but it's intentionally so, because I just believe if I'm gonna let you into the doors of Milk Bar and give you the recipes, I'm not going to dumb it down for you. You're going to get the experience like you're walking in our doors as a pastry cook on your first day. And then our second cookbook, Milk Bar Life, is more about like the simple, homey recipes that we make for each other off the clock at Milk Bar. So the first one is about being in the doors at Milk Bar and the food that we make and share with the world. And the second cookbook, Milk Bar Life, is about the food that we make off the clock outside of the doors of the Milk Bar, that we make in our downtime, that fuels us, that's hilarious, that inspires us, and it very much embodies the don't take yourself so seriously mentality.
So great. There are many ways in. You can make these recipes at home using the cookbooks. You can just go ahead and order them online at the Milk Bar website, or you can stop by a Milk Bar in New York or Toronto or DC. Obviously, Christina can't be in every one of those places all of the time. We feel super lucky that she was able to be here with us today. Thank you, Christina Tozzi.
Thank you, guys. Have a great day and stop by the cafe. I can't wait to
see
you.
We will, definitely. Awesome. Thanks. And that wraps up another Off-Duty podcast. For more podcasts, check us out at wsj.com/podcasts. Follow us on Twitter at wsjpodcasts and become a subscriber on iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, and now look for us on the Google Play Music app on Android devices. And as always, if you like what you've heard, tell a friend.